This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff, and it's disclaimer time. I met house call veterinarian Kathleen Connor when she came out to euthanize my FIV-riddled rescue cat, Lewis, at my home. But Kathleen looked deep into Lewis's eyes and said, "I don't think he's ready to go yet. I just took an acupuncture course. Want to try that?" Lewis, I'm delighted to say, survived another 2 years, a bit tottery perhaps, but enjoying himself mightily. So I decided to ask house call veterinarian Kathleen Connor, who's full of stories, to come on The Spark and talk about herself.
My mom said my first couple words that I learned how to say were horse and vet. And I have not wanted to be anything else but a vet since I can remember.
Were you raised on a farm?
Nope. I was raised in suburbia, but we had a little flock of chickens and an illegal little flock of chickens that we were supposed to have because it's not licensed for farm animals, but we had our flock of chickens. I was in 4-H, and I actually tried one time to buy a sheep and keep it at my friend's farm. But the mother of the person I was buying it from called and said, "Where do you want it delivered?" And my mom answered. And she said, "No, ain't happening."
Okay. Mm-hmm. You go to college. You mm-hmm. go to vet school. Where did the decision to become this marvelous have SUV will travel
exactly
come from?
Well, when I was growing up, I read all of James Herriot's books, you know, All Creatures Great and Small.
Yes.
And I thought, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. I want to go around and be people's vets. And it took me about 10 years after I graduated to finally get in a spot where I could do that.
Where does business come from? I mean, not everybody is looking to have their FIV-addled cat put down.
A lot of word of mouth. The only advertising I've ever done has been Yellow Pages. But to tell you the truth, a lot of it's been referral from other people.
I asked you here today because you were out to take a look at our sole remaining cat. And you launched into this story of the attack cat.
Oh, yes. That's one of my favorite stories.
And I want you to forget you've told it to me and tell it again.
Okay. I got this call from this older gentleman, and he has his cat that was itching a little bit. And he said it was really difficult to get this cat into the vet. I said, "Well, that's what I do. You know, I'm here to take care of animals that don't want to go to the vet, or, you know, you can't get them there." And we made the appointment. I was about to hang up, and I should have known when he told me this as I was hanging up. He's like, "I don't need a guard dog. I've got a guard cat." And I laughed, and I went, "Oh, okay, that's funny." So I arrive at our appointed time, and I walk in the house, and most cats will either run from me or just sit there and look at me. This one decided that she was the devil. And came at me, ears back, teeth bared, and claws out, ready and loaded for bear. And I just went, "It ain't happening today." So I tried to do what I call my wild animal exam, where I just kind of, you know, observe them while they're interacting with their environment. Not happening. She was ready to nail me. And I said, "Okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to leave you a sedative. We're going to have you mix it in with her food about an hour before I come. And we'll go ahead and take a look at her." And I get there at the appointed time, and I had forgotten to tell them to put her in a back room so that I wasn't chasing her around the house. Now, this cat had gotten enough sedation for about a 25-pound cat. And, you know, I thought she would have been curled up in a corner somewhere, but no. She was stumbling around like a drunk on a 3-day binge, coming at me, ears back, teeth bared, and claws at the ready. And I said, "All right, we're going to try this one more time. And next time, let's put her in the back room. I'll come back in about an hour after you've got her back in there." So we got got her in there. And I said, "You know, you just leave the room. I've got my elk hide gloves on, you know, goes up over my elbows. And, you know, as long as she doesn't bite my hands, I'm okay." So we go, I get back there, and we take two circuits around the room. And I'm looking at this cat going, "All right, buddy, you beat me. I throw up my hands. You won." And I turn my back to her, and out of the corner of my eye, I can see that she had jumped up on a sewing machine cover and had curled up like she was going to sleep, like, "Yay, I won, she's leaving." And I had one glove off. Fortunately, it was my right hand, and which is the hand I give the injections with. I mean, all I had to do was give her a rabies shot. I mean, this cat had to have a rabies.
That was the mission.
Yeah, this was the mission. I had to give this cat a rabies shot because the cat bites. And I've got my back turned to her, and I could see her out of the corner of my eye, you know, all curled up sphinx-like. I mean, it happened quickly. That's how much the sedation was still working. And I'm thinking, do I, don't I? I said, okay, I'm going to do this, but I've only got one chance. I visualized in my head, it was shots in one hand, glove all the way up over the elbow on the other, and I've got three steps. And I counted in my head, one, two, three, and I was going to scruff her and get the shot in her. Well, when you're wearing gloves, you don't have a lot of hand strength because you don't have a lot of room to move. Well, this cat knew that, flipped around when I had a hold of her. So I had to hold her down by her neck. She had a hold of my glove with all four of her canine teeth through the glove finger. She had her front feet wrapped around me. She was going after me with her back feet, gave her the rabies shot, and jumped away.
Like a calf roper.
Yep, yep, and said, thank God.
Yeah. Meow, 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 meow.
What's your day like?
Usually I start my appointments about 9. Come home for lunch because I got a little puppy now that I have to let out at lunch. And then I usually go till 5 or 6 in the evening, just travel around to people's places. It's interesting. I don't do a lot of vaccines. It's a lot of... unfortunately, hospice care,
yeah.
If that's, you know, because a lot of people don't want to take their dogs in when they're really old. They just want to keep them comfortable. And so I do a lot
of... I can relate to that.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. I just lost one of my most favoritest of patients this past Monday. She was very sweet, very vocal Labrador retriever that died before I could get to her. She just curled up on her owner's feet and said, I'm done. I'm like... You're not supposed to do that. You were supposed to live a little bit longer. But she decided when she was going to go.
You have a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
What other animals are in residence now in your house in the country?
Various small rodents that live in the forest that decide they want to live in my house. Spiders. I actually had a rattlesnake on my front porch. Yes. It's no longer with us. I've got 5 other adult dogs. I got one rescued Labrador who has diabetes, and she's one of the toughest dogs I've ever known. The 4 other ones are all my search dogs. And then I have 5 cats that are supposed to keep the vermin down, but every once in a while they bring the bird in or bring the mouse in rather than taking it out. And 2 horses. And I have a bear that's now living on our property, too.
What are the biggest challenges of a life as a house call vet, besides your taxes? Figuring out your...
Trying to get everybody taken care of, you know, because there are some days where I hate turning people down. I like to be able to see them all on the same day, because most of the time, it's in their minds, it's an emergency. You know, their cat, their dog's been ill, and it finally took a turn for the worse. And or they didn't, you know, cats and dogs are good at hiding things.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally got sick enough for the owner to go, hey, there's something wrong here. And I just don't like turning people down, but that ends up being a long day. So that's the toughest thing, is getting everybody. I've been very lucky. I've had very patient patients, so to speak. And I've got a very good bunch of clients. So
you always strike me as a happy house call vet.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. I got fired from a couple of jobs and I thought, well, what's wrong with them? And I realized that it's not their problem. I don't like bosses. I'm never going to get rich off of it, but I have tremendous job satisfaction. Tremendous. It's I enjoy being able to go into somebody's home and sit and chat with them for a little while their dogs are running around. Because what people don't realize is while I'm chatting with them, I'm looking at their environment. I'm looking at, you know, what the dog is doing, how the dog is reacting. You know, when they're not stressed, they don't hide things.
And then there's search and rescue. Kathy and Connor started with Blue and Gray Search and Rescue back in the mid-90s.
Got my first search dog. He was roaming the streets of Harrisonburg, and he wasn't the greatest search dog, but he was the kindest, most patient search dog.
So he was just a stray?
Mm-hmm. He was just a stray.
And what made you say this is a search dog?
because he looked at me, I looked at him, and I said, you're it. That's exactly how it was. And come hell or high water, he was going to be my search dog. He made one find before he blew out a tendon in a back leg and had to be retired. And it was a suicide up on the parkway.
How do you train a search dog?
It's all a game. And what we tap into as dog handlers is the dog's desire to hunt. Some people say prey drive. I say hunt drive because prey drive is visual. They see something moving. They want to chase it. We use that to build some drive. But what we want is a dog that will hunt. In a wolf pack, the alpha male and female say, teach the puppies, this is what will get you fed, or this is what will keep you alive, or this is what will is your reward. And so they teach them to hunt rabbits and deer, and if they're in the North Woods, you know, caribou. But what we do as dog trainers is teach them that if you hunt a human scent, you get your most favorite toy, your most favorite treat, and we tap into that hunt drive that the dog naturally has.
What was going on back in 96 that you said, I want to do this? I want to be a search and rescue person.
It was just kind of an idea that, I decided I had moved around for every 18 months up until I moved into the valley. And I decided that this was where I was going to stay. And mm-hmm. I liked hiking. I liked the outdoors. There was a flyer for Blue and Gray Search and Rescue giving a demo, and I went, that's what I want to do. So I spent about 6 months with them without a dog and started looking for a dog, and Ben showed up on my friend's front door. So
Now, when you said, I want to do this,
mm-hmm.
There's lots of ways to hike
mm-hmm.
without going up and looking for missing people. What about this whole operation?
I love the interaction between me and my dog. And there's a partnership that a dog handler has with their dog that cannot be compared to a pet. It is a different kind of bond because you're partners. You depend on your dog and your dog depends on you. And at 1 o'clock in the morning when you're on the Appalachian Trail and you can't see those hash marks that mark it, and your dog's wearing a little glow-in-the-dark collar, and it's raining, and it's misting, and you can't see, and you have to follow that collar because you know that collar on that dog will get you home.
And you're happy doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it.
How do you get asked to go search and rescue?
We have a memorandum of understanding with the Virginia Department of Emergency Management, and it's called the Responsible Agent. They will call in to VDEM and say, this is what we've got. And this is what we want. And so depending on where the call comes in from, that then determines which team is activated. There's a big search for Robbie Woods over in Hanover. And everybody in the state, he was the autistic child that got lost near King's Dominion. Everybody in the state was activated for that.
Were you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What was that like?
It was huge. It was bigger than just about any search I've ever been involved with. Fortunately, with a dog, you don't have to deal with a lot of the extra people because they know that it will just get in the dog's way.
Mm-hmm.
So it was me and my dog and two team members, and we searched, about a 200-acre plot of land.
Yeah.
And he wasn't there.
Have you traveled?
My second search dog, Finn, and I are the ones that have traveled a lot. He and I were deployed down to Katrina once everything had been drained and they were looking to clear the Ninth Ward, and they wanted to make sure there was no bodies left. And he actually helped either found or confirmed that there was somebody missing under this house here. And then in the summer of 2009, we were asked to go down to Guyana, South America, with two other dog handlers and a search team to go look for an airplane that was missing in the jungle. That was interesting. Very interesting.
Okay, give me just the brief, description.
It was very hot and humid.
Yeah. And jungly.
And jungly, yeah. There was an airplane missing from a company around here that they were hoping to find. There was a lot of groundwork that was done before we were deployed so that they could narrow down the area where they thought the plane might be. And they got the team together, sent us out in the jungle, and the jungle whooped our ass. It did.
And what does that mean?
That means that we had people dropping like flies.
Yeah. Did you make it or did you drop?
No, I made it because I was smart enough to talk to one of my clients. She is was the head of kinesiology at James Madison. And I told her in an offhand thing, I'm going to the jungle. She said, what? I said, yeah, we're going for a mission down in the jungle. She says, you have got to get yourself in shape. So she handed me a workout schedule. And me and my dog followed it. And I also made sure that somebody else was carrying my pack. So I made it. I was one of the few that didn't collapse. But
you're a good Boy Scout. You planned ahead.
I planned ahead, and I made somebody else carry my pack. That's what I did.
Find a link to Stone Spring Veterinary Services, Kathleen Connor's name for her mobile vet operation, on the Spark page at WMRA.org, where you'll also find a link to Blue and Gray Search and Rescue that features pictures of Kathleen and her dog Finn in action. The Spark is a joint production of the WMRA Land Community of Listeners and the staff of WMRA Public Radio. The Spark theme music is supplied by the Avant Gardeners of Albemarle County. Terry Ward is the Spark web wrangler. Many thanks to Bob and Terry for their production help with this week's show. And special thanks to Heather Yoder for putting me in touch with my country neighbor, Marlon Burkholder. One final thing. Your comments about the show are oh so welcome on the Spark page at WMRA.org, as are your suggestions for future Sparkian guests. I'm Martha Woodruff. It's been a great pleasure to be with you.